Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The United States is dismissing China's proposal to ease tensions on the Korean Peninsula after the latest missile launches by Pyongyang. Foreign Minister Wang Yi had called for a halt to North Korea's missile and nuclear programs with a simultaneous suspension of joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises viewed in the North as a prelude to war. The U.S. U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley told the U.N. Security Council such a plan might be considered for any leader other than Kim Jong-un.
We have not seen any goodwill at all coming from North Korea. I appreciate all of my counterparts wanting to talk about talks and negotiations. We are not dealing with a rational person. If this was any other country, we would be talking about that and it wouldn't be an issue.
She described an unbelievable, irresponsible arrogance coming out of the North Korean leader and said all options in dealing with Pyongyang's nuclear and missile threat remain on the table. In Washington, U.S. spokesman Mark Toner said the U.S. stands ready to engage in conditional talks.
We remain open to dialogue with North Korea with the aim of returning to credible and authentic negotiations on the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. But, and I'll be very clear about this, the onus is on North Korea to take meaningful actions toward denuclearization and refrain from provocations.
But he said new ways must be found to convince Pyongyang to end both its sanctioned nuclear and missile activities. At least four people have been killed in northeast Madagascar, with hundreds made homeless by Tropical Storm Inao. By late Wednesday, it had been downgraded to a tropical storm. Thousands of Kenyan doctors on strike for months, refusing to return to work in a dispute over wages and working conditions. This is VOA News. The UN envoy to Syria told the Security Council Wednesday that talks on the country's political future will resume March 23rd in Geneva. Stéphane de Mistura said the just-concluded fourth round showed how serious the intent is by both the government and opposition to engage in dialogue.
We did not expect miracles, and frankly, we didn't have miracles. But we achieved much more than many people had imagined we could have.
U.S.-UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said Syria must no longer be a safe haven for terrorists and that it's important to get Iran and its proxies out. That's expected to be a topic of discussion in Moscow when Israel's prime minister meets Thursday with Russian President Vladimir Putin. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson Wednesday, after meeting Israeli and Palestinian officials, said Britain remains committed to seeing a two-state solution to the Mideast conflict.
And all our government are, as you know, firm, strong supporters, rock-like supporters of Israel. And what we want is to see an Israel that is at peace with its neighbours. And I should remind you that the policy of our government is for a two-state solution.
But Johnson acknowledged obstacles, including what he called the accelerated pace of Jewish settlement activity and demolitions in the occupied West Bank. He said such barriers must be removed. The vice chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Paul Selva, told U.S. lawmakers Wednesday that Russia has deployed a cruise missile in violation of a 30-year-old arms agreement.
We believe that the Russians have deployed a land-based cruise missile that violates the spirit and intent of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. We have conferred with the Russians in the bilateral consultation committee that exists underneath the New START treaty in order to confront them on that deployment, and we will continue to do so.
The U.S. said the SSC-8 had been tested in 2014, violating the treaty that bans U.S. and Russian intermediate-range missiles on land. Moscow denies any arms treaty violation. A fire that torched a home for abused teens and children in Guatemala Wednesday killed at least 21 girls. Dozens have been treated for burns. The blaze apparently started when some residents set fire to mattresses after being isolated following an escape attempt. The mayor of Senegal's capital, Dakar, has been arrested on suspicion of embezzlement. Khalifa Sall, who denies any wrongdoing, is suspected of embezzling nearly $3 million in public funds. His lawyer said the detention is an effort to prevent him from running in July's election. Former Utah governor and presidential aspirant John Huntsman has been tapped by President Donald Trump as the next U.S. ambassador to Moscow. Huntsman served as top diplomat to China and Singapore under previous administrations. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA. morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations says 17 million people face hunger in East Africa.
In these tragic circumstances, the rapid spread of diarrhea and cholera, killing people, making people suffer enormously, with a clear need of support from the international community.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres during a visit to Kenya on Wednesday. A Liberian opposition candidate denies he's being supported by President Sirleaf over her own vice president in this year's election. The Nigerian army establishes an independent board of inquiry to investigate allegations of human rights abuses by the army.
The essence of it actually is to critically investigate all allegations of human rights violations or abuses against some personnel of the Nigerian Army with a view to make recommendations.
Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman is the Nigerian Army spokesman. Cameroon women pushed for greater participation. Women worldwide took Wednesday off yesterday to highlight their economic power. And this morning, we'll tell you about a South African female boxer and her struggle for recognition. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations estimates that more than 17 million people are facing hunger in 9 countries. The UN Secretary General has called on the international community to support the drought-stricken nations in Eastern Africa. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres ended a visit to Kenya warning Wednesday Eastern Africans face starvation and the situation may worsen if nothing is done to avert the crisis. Somalia is facing its second famine in less than 6 years. South Sudan has declared some parts of the country in famine. And in Kenya, the government declared drought a national disaster. More than 10 million people are going to bed hungry in Ethiopia. Guterres discussed the South Sudan political and humanitarian crisis with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta.
We had the opportunity to discuss and again to find an identity point of view on how to create conditions for South Sudan to have an inclusive dialogue leading to a true peaceful settlement of the problems that South Sudan faces, and at the same time with the humanitarian access to be granted to all parts of the territory.
The UN leader said violence, looting and blocking aid from reaching those in need has worsened the situation in South Sudan and has put more than 1 million people at risk. Guterres says a major effort will be required to end the crisis and the suffering of the South Sudanese people.
We are not yet there. We still have many incidents taking place, many fighting taking place, many problems taking place. But the risks of genocide have considerably diminished. And I'm hopeful that with this unity of work, with African leadership, IGAD, African Union and UN, we will be able to move in the right direction, being aware of the enormous challenges that exist.
Of 17 million people in need of urgent humanitarian aid, a third live in Somalia, half of the country's population. Lack of rain and constant conflict has worsened the situation in Somalia. Guterres visited Somalia Tuesday, where he says the situation is complicated.
Having witnessed the deadly combination of conflict, hunger and of disease caused by the continued struggle of Somalia to be able to defeat Shabab, to end terrorism and to create the conditions for peace to be re-established, but with drought that has had a devastating impact in the economy and in the lives of the Somalis. And in these tragic circumstances, the rapid spread of diarrhea and cholera, killing people, making people suffer enormously, with a clear need of support from the international community.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is seeking at least $800 million to avert the crisis in Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
the Nigerian army has established an independent board of inquiry to investigate allegations of human rights abuses committed by soldiers in the fight against terrorism. In its recent report, Amnesty International said Nigerian police and military committed torture and other ill treatment. It also accuses the military of carrying out arbitrary arrests, detentions, and extrajudicial executions of people suspected of being Boko Haram fighters. Amnesty said these acts amounted to war crimes. Nigerian military spokesman Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman tells viewers Peter Clotty that any soldier found to have committed gross human rights abuses will be dealt with in accordance with Nigerian law.
The essence of it actually is to critically investigate all allegations of human rights violations or abuses against some personnel of the Nigerian Army with a view to make recommendations. And one thing I want to add here is that the Board of Inquiry is independent because it's comprised of individuals who have paid their dues either well in service and now they are doing well.
Some Nigerians I spoke with are saying that this looks like an admission by the Nigerian military or army of the allegations made by Amnesty International that soldiers of the Nigerian army committed grave human rights abuses in the fight against terrorist groups, including Boko Haram, in the country.
Well, that is not correct. Although there are quite a number of individuals and organizations who express concern or even allege cases of misconduct and abuse by some of our personnel, especially during the counter-terrorism and counter-insurgency operations. You know, so the essence of it actually is to make sure that these allegations are investigated, and whoever is found guilty, definitely the full wrath of the law will be invoked on that person. We understand that actually the allegations are not good for the image of the Nigerian army, and they don't augur well with a good civil-military relations and are capable of even demoralizing our own personnel. After all said and done, whatever is the outcome, it will enhance performance.
What will happen after the investigation is completed? Because usually investigations are done, recommendations are made, left untouched, and they gather dust until the next allegation comes up. What is going to be different this time?
Yeah, well, after the impartial investigation of all these allegations and finding out the matter, it will enable the relevant authorities to take appropriate action. If there is any infraction, I can rest assure you it is not meant for any cosmetic reason, is to take appropriate disciplinary action with great sense of responsibility, taking into cognizance the laws of the land, especially as it affects military discipline and conduct.
How open will the Nigerian military be going forward, opening your doors for international rights organizations, including Amnesty International, that has been critical of some of the alleged human rights abuses that it reported in its latest report released a few weeks ago?
We are so much concerned about the protection and promotion of human rights in the conduct of operations. And realizing the importance of it, we were the one who invited Amnesty International early last year and opened our doors for them. And they came, we made submissions which they critically examined. And unfortunately, they were alleging that investigations carried out were not independent enough. And we want to really, you cannot just come and, you know, accuse persons without giving them the benefit of doubt by hearing from their own side of the story.
Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman is the spokesman for the Nigerian Army. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 9th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. One of the candidates in this year's Liberia presidential election is denying he is being supported by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf over her own vice president, Joseph Boakai. The Liberty Party's Charles Bramskin describes the allegations as complete foolishness. He says he understands Vice President Boakai had made similar assertions and that he, Bramskin, promised to address the issue fully upon his return to Liberia. In an interview interview with Liberia's front page Africa newspaper late last month, Vice President Boakai said he was not sure who President Sully was supporting in the election. Bromskane, who competed and lost the last two presidential elections, says he hopes his third time running would be the charm. He says it is important that someone like him be allowed to carry on whatever accomplishments President Sirleaf has made over the last 12 years.
We're hoping that 3 is a charm and that we're going to win this time. Like the chairman of Liberty Party, Ben Savi, said, and I believe that Liberian people did not reject me or did not reject the Liberty Party the last 2 times. They have reserved us for this time. You know, it is important that after 12 years of the President Sirleaf administration, whatever accomplishment she may have made, it's important that someone like me be allowed to move this process forward, build on the foundation that has been laid. Our message has always been clear. Maybe I have not communicated it well enough to the people. So our approach this time is reaching out to every Liberian and explaining the strategic principles upon which our platform is based.
Let me ask you, I hear from some Liberians that you are being supported by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. In fact, they point to the fact that some of our officials are in your campaign. Are you being supported by President Sirleaf?
Let me say this much. I had planned not to react to that foolishness, but I will do so because I understand Vice President Joe Bwaka himself had made a statement of that effect. But I wouldn't want to do it at this interview. I will do it when I go back home. Complete foolishness, okay? I have been the most effective opposition against President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, okay, since 2005 when we ran the first election and she won. I have been the most effective, okay? So this is complete foolishness. It's not true, but I will speak to it more when I'm in Liberia.
Do you think this year's election might come down to the whole Congo versus American Liberians or native Liberians? I say this because there's a thought out there that you are an American Liberian.
Well, Jimmy, first, let's correct a historical misnomer. There is nobody in Liberia who is American Liberian. I'll tell you why. To have been an American Liberian, one must have been an American first. So anyone who calling himself or calling others American Liberian does not know what he's talking about. Of course, there are some politicians who have nothing to put forward to the Liberian people. So their claim to power or their claim to fame is to divide our people. But I don't have to refer to that. I don't have to tell you my name, Charles Walker Brumskin, but my mother so-so-so, my father so-so-so, have and this and have. I don't have to go through that because I have a platform. I know what I want to do with regard to education. Liberians have suffered so far from the Ebola virus disease, from lack of health facilities, and what we intend to do. I have a plan of action. So anybody you hear talking about Congo and country, check them out. They don't have the vaguest idea where they want to take our country. But I'm telling you one thing. I believe in the Liberian people. And I can tell them that dog is not going to bark this time around.
22 candidates in this election that's coming this year, including Vice President Joseph Bwaka, you mentioned, Ambassador George Weah, Mr. Cummings, Benona Ure. Which of these candidates do you think might be your biggest competitor?
I consider all of them as good Liberians, viable candidates. I'm not going to take any of them for granted. And we're going to campaign. We're going to reach out to every Liberian, knowing that any one of them could win the election. And the Liberian people could be deprived of the best candidate, who is Charles Walker Brumskin.
That's Charles Brumskin of Liberia's opposition Liberty Party. He was speaking with me here in Washington, D.C. In Cameroon, civil society groups marked this year's International Women's Day by urging women to register to vote and take on larger roles in decision-making in their communities. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story from Yaoundé.
Women should be given a chance to show their talent today in a society.
Gender activist and singer Gracia Fonyi uses her voice in Yaoundé to encourage women to stand up for their rights. Among those listening to her is 45-year-old Saliha Madiko, who has, for the first time, registered to vote.
Pour ma part, c'est déjà sensibiliser les hommes. Parce que la femme musulmane.
She says the most important thing women achieved during these activities is that they educated men to allow their wives and daughters to register to vote, in particular in the major Muslim parts of northern Cameroon, where she is from, and where she says men are accustomed to being dominant. In Cameroon, women are underrepresented on vote-up rolls and in decision-making circles, from village councils to parliament. Fonfobuzie Martin Asanji is the traditional ruler of Chomba village in northwestern Cameroon. He says it is important to encourage parents to not only send their sons to school.
The women should empower themselves, especially educationally, because you cannot be thinking of going to parliament or being a mayor when you are not educated.
A local NGO, More Women in Politics, has organized caravans nationwide over the past 3 months and held special events in regional centers for Women's Day.
Notre cible, c'est véritablement les jeunes filles et les femmes.
NGO President Justine Diffo says by targeting young women and girls, they intend to increase the number of women participating in elections in Cameroon to at least 60%. Despite making up 52% of the adult population in Cameroon, women account for less than half of registered voters, according to figures released last year by the elections management body ELECAM. About a third of National Assembly seats are held by women, and Cameroon has just 31 female mayors out of the total 370 in the country. Celestine Kecha-Cortez, mayor of Bangante in western Cameroon, says women need to use their numerical strength.
Il faut que les femmes acceptent d'accompagner les femmes. Car si nous sommes majoritaires,
she says women should promote other women by helping them register to vote. She says competition with men is stiff, but she says if women are united and have confidence in themselves, a woman with the will and qualifications can get elected. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Millions of women took to the streets in the United States and overseas this past January to highlight pay inequality, discrimination, and other societal challenges. On Wednesday, as part of International Women's Day, many hope to put the spotlight on the same issues, this time by staying home as part of a day without a woman's strike. VOA's correspondent Aru Pandey has more from Washington.
Few can forget the images from January 21st, as tens of thousands of women rallied in the U.S. Capitol the day after President Donald Trump's inauguration, demanding equal opportunities. For mother of two, Vanessa Cardenas, the march was just the beginning in highlighting the ongoing struggle for women.
I think that women in the United States have come a long way, but still, we still haven't broken those big barriers, whether it's becoming the first president of the United States, or having equal pay, or, for example, making sure that we can, you know, we have control of our own bodies, because we still have those fights today.
While women across the world are encouraged to take Wednesday off from paid and unpaid labor to showcase their economic power, Cardenas says she will shop at a woman-owned business to show her support, but will still be at work here at Emily's List, which helps get more Democratic pro-choice women into elected office.
We make up over half the country, but right now we're less than 20% of Congress. That's not enough. We will not get policies that support women, that support families, that support our economy to the best of their ability until we have an equal number of women and men at the governing table.
Karen Agnes, founder of the conservative women's group Network of Enlightened Women, agrees on the need for gender equality, but she says Wednesday's strike excludes women like herself and sends the wrong message.
Women have made great gains, and it's frustrating for me as a
young woman that the women's movement today really see women as victims still and as a victim class in need of the government to fix their problems.
No one could predict the massive crowds of women that showed up for January's march. It's hard to tell just how many will send the same message by not showing up for work on Wednesday. Aru Pandey, VOA News, Washington.
In the decades since South Africa allowed women to become professional boxers, only a few dozen have succeeded. While the fighters don't lack for talent, they say they struggle for opportunities and recognition and face intense pressure to quit. VOA's Anita Power follows a 24-year-old South African boxer who is fighting for her place in the ring. She reports from Johannesburg.
The sweet sound of the sweet science, but with a twist. Johannesburg's gritty inner-city Hillbrow Boxing Club has become an unlikely home for some in South Africa's tiny group of professional women fighters. It is home to welterweight champion Rita Mwebi, who has been trained for years by the club's founder, George Kosi. The club's latest up-and-comer is 24-year-old Selina Mabunda, who recently registered as a professional at 63 kilograms after about 3 years of training.
You have fears, become scared of the punches, but once you receive one punch, you know that it's game on. You have to fight back or you go home.
Her quest for recognition, however, has been an uphill battle, and a surprising pushback has come from someone she expected to be in her corner, her mother, who once tagged along to watch her train.
You wouldn't believe what she said after I've done training. She was like, why don't you get a child first? She was so scared that I wouldn't be able to bear children, like the way I train.
The gym is a male-heavy space, but has trained several female fighters, amateur and professional. In South Africa, professional fighters can earn thousands of dollars for winning fights. Gym founder Kosi says he is proud of the handful of women he has trained.
I love to train women.
Kosi says he thinks women fighters learn quickly. Other women say talent is not enough. Makosi Kwabe says she was pressured out of going professional, so she became a coach.
Ooh, my mother. So my mother, she didn't like it. Just my father to tell me I must stop. Because they don't like boxing. I said, what can I do? Because I love boxing all my heart. So my mother, she asked me no. So it's how I stopped. Then I asked coach, coach, I like sports and I can't sit back, do nothing.
South Africa's sports minister recently vowed to increase opportunities for women boxers. But there are just not enough women in the sport. Even at this gym, women fighters often train with men. Mabunda says women boxers struggle to find opponents because there are so few. She went pro in early March, but does not have a fight scheduled. Mabunda, however, says she has faith.
The most important thing is that you believe in yourself. If people don't believe in yourself, you put that belief in yourself and then you go. And they will follow you eventually.
Until that happens, she will keep shadow boxing alone in the ring, facing down her toughest opponent, herself. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Nigerian army has established an independent board of inquiry to investigate allegations of human rights abuses committed by soldiers in the fight against terrorism. In its recent report, Amnesty International said Nigerian police and military committed torture and other ill treatment. Two top legal scholars say the fight for South Africa to stay in the International Criminal Court is just beginning, a day after the government officially revoked its notice of intent to withdraw from the War Crimes Court. That decision came after a South African court ruled last month that that notice given by South Africa's cabinet was unconstitutional and that the matter needs to go through the parliament. That's it for this Thursday, March 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Jackson Vunganyi, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today,
right now. This is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA.